Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. It was a lively meeting of the El Cajon City Council this week where citizens demanded an independent investigation of a police officer accused of sexual harassment, while other residents offered up ideas ranging from a Chargers stadium in East County to a city-run utility district. Plus, hear about action the city took on the East County Performing Arts Center and about a court ruling on El Cajon's law regulating alcohol sales. In our Capitol report, we'll tell you about a bipartisan marijuana reform bill introduced in Congress and about student aid reforms signed by President Obama to help reduce student debt. In Crime Beat, hear about a motorist brandishing a gun on a local freeway and about a Border Patrol agent charged with voyeurism. Our newsmaker interview today is with Christina Turin, a talented harpist who once played with the Von Trapp family from Sound of Music fame. She'll tell you all about an international convention of harp players in San Diego and two harp concerts in honor of St. Patrick's Day. Plus, learn about a music harp therapy program and how a revival of folk harps has its roots right here in East County atop Mount Laguna. And as a special treat, we'll have some Celtic harp music for you in honor of St. Patrick's Day. We'll also have the outcome of the firefighters' boot drive across the county, and in our education report, you'll learn about some special radios teachers can request for classroom emergency kits. Those wildflowers blooming in the Anza Borrego Desert are attracting tourists, but also some voracious pests that are munching their way through the flower fields, and we'll have details. And then on Green Scene, hear results of a study just out that reveals just how hot the growth in solar power has been nationally over the past year. Speaking of hot, on Destination East County, we'll have some amazing events coming up across the area, from music festivals to art shows, author book signings, historical reenactments, and a St. Patrick's Day run. We'll have some new findings for you on how saunas can benefit heart health, news about a veterans memorial that was vandalized in La Mesa, and information about efforts to halt the sale of dog and cat meat in California. Hear about a victory for the Aztecs basketball team, and we'll end our show today later with a repeat of an important story on voter disenfranchisement, with startling details uncovered by investigative reporter Greg Pallast. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, because East County matters. It was a lively meeting of the El Cajon City Council Tuesday afternoon. During public comments, two women spoke out to voice outrage that an El Cajon police sergeant accused of sending naked photos of himself to women officers remains on the force. The sergeant, Richard Gonzalez, was demoted to officer, and the city now faces a lawsuit filed by a female officer who alleges sexual harassment and discrimination. Bonnie Price with the East County Democratic Club told the council that she was astonished and outraged to hear a 10 News report on the scandal. She asked why the alleged perpetrator is still on the force after reportedly texting photos of his genitalia to multiple women and, according to the lawsuit filing, propositioning a female officer and her gay partner for a sexual threesome. Price stated, "Sexual harassment is a crime." She added that allowing the accused officer to remain on the force is an insult to women of this community. How can any woman expect to call the police and be treated with respect? A second speaker, Gloria Martes, called for an independent investigation. She noted that keeping the officer only increases the city's liability for any future actions, adding that if a lawsuit is successful, taxpayers will pay the price. The mother of two daughters also told council members, harassment in the workplace should not be tolerated. City Attorney Morgan Foley stated that all proper procedures were followed regarding the accusations and that the city cannot comment further on the personnel matter due to the pending litigation. Other speakers offered some positive and creative ideas for the city to consider. Robert German with Citizens Against Gillespie Expansion, or CAGE, submitted a proposal to build a Chargers stadium on a portion of land at Gillespie Field. His plan would allow one runway to remain, but would create an entertainment and sports complex. Instead of an Aerotropolis proposed by others, he suggested a Chargers-tropolis that could potentially bring a Super Bowl or World Cup soccer match to East County. He said, El Cajon is still the poorest city in the county. We have an opportunity here. Councilman Ambrose noted that El Cajon doesn't own the airport, which is owned by the county. But German said the council has been influential with supervisors in the past on another airport issue, successfully getting a measure passed to require background checks of foreign flight students. Mayor Wells asked city staff to analyze the proposal and promised to get back to German and tell you what we can do and can't do, he said, adding, I know that everyone here would love to see the Chargers stay in the San Diego area. Ray Lutz with Citizens Oversight suggested that the city could make a lot of money if it would become its own municipal power network. The city could get its power at cost and make money offering power to others. Lutz said that in Anaheim, which has its own power network, electricity costs $165 per megawatt hour, while in San Diego, residents pay over double that rate at $374 per megawatt hour, with SDG&E reaping the profits. Mayor Wells asked the city manager to brief him on that idea, adding, if there is a way we can save money, I'm all for that. Earlier in the meeting, Lutz criticized the city, though, for approving community block grants for the East County Transitional Living Center's homeless programs because the group's primary goal is to convert people to Christianity. But Mayor Wells and other council members praised the program for successfully helping many homeless people transition off the streets and into jobs, noting that the center does offer some non-religious options to help the homeless get off the streets, although they are only short-term. Council approved 5-0, accepting bids for renovations on the East County Performing Arts Center, moving forward on long-awaited plans to reopen the theater that's been closed for over 5 years, a move that drew applause even from Lutz, long a critic of the city's actions on the theater, and founder of the group Save ECPAC, dedicated to getting the East County Performing Arts Center reopened. Council also recognized the achievements of local students and praised two El Cajon high schools for making the CIF championship playoffs in basketball. Councilman Gary Kendrick announced that a court ruling has upheld the city's deemed-approved ordinance to restrict alcohol sales off-site. Groups from the alcohol industry that filed the suits have opted not to appeal, so the ruling stands. Sunshine Horton closed by inviting everyone to participate in Sunday's St. Patrick's Day Mile Run starting at 7:30 a.m. downtown to benefit two nonprofits, St. Madeline Sophie's and Noah's Homes, helping developmentally disabled adults and seniors. Mayor Wells concluded, I'll see you all there. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Legislation introduced this week in the Senate would protect patients, doctors, and clinics from federal prosecution in states where medical marijuana is legal. The bill would also allow Veterans Affairs physicians to recommend medical cannabis in those states. In addition, the bill would reclassify marijuana as a Schedule II drug, opening the door for research on medical benefits. Marijuana is currently classified as a Schedule I drug, reserved for substances with no medical benefits, in the same category as heroin. The bipartisan bill is sponsored by Senators Cory Booker, Rand Paul, and Kirsten Gillibrand. The measure would not legalize marijuana in states where medical marijuana is still banned. At present, 23 states have legalized medical marijuana, and 4 have legalized recreational use as well. About a dozen more have legalized a form of marijuana for medical use that has low levels of THC, the psychoactive ingredient. Sale or use of non-medical marijuana would remain illegal under federal law, though the Obama administration has told prosecutors not to target such operations in states where the activities are legal. Another bill, however, has been introduced in the House that would go further. Democratic congressional members Jared Polis of Colorado and Earl Blumenauer of Oregon have authored a measure that would remove marijuana from the Controlled Substance Act completely and regulate it similar to alcohol. A CBS poll in January 2014 found that 86% of Americans believe medical marijuana should be legal for doctors to prescribe, while for the first time in the poll's history, a majority, 51%, say they believe all marijuana should be legalized. Moreover, nearly two-thirds, 62% of those polled, say that legalization of marijuana should be up to the states, not the federal government.
President Barack Obama on Tuesday signed the Student Aid Bill of Rights, a presidential memorandum aimed at making it easier for graduates to pay off student loans. The president says he aims to assure that every young person in this country who is willing to put in the effort can afford to go to college. Speaking to students at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, the president added, "Higher education has never been more important, but it's also never been more expensive." The Student Aid Bill of Rights, the latest in a series of reforms to help students, will require student loan services or middlemen who collect on loan payments to inform borrowers if they are late on payments so they can afford default, and also inform borrowers if their loans are transferred to another company. The reform follows complaints that some loan services intentionally misled borrowers or took steps that triggered late fees unnecessarily. In addition, the Federal Education Department will set up a new website next year to make it easy for borrowers to file complaints about student loan servicers, lenders, collection agencies, and schools so that the department can respond quickly to resolve problems. The government will also establish a central site for borrowers to check on their student loan accounts and track payments themselves. If you make payments early, lenders will have to apply those prepayments to loans with the highest interest rate. The administration has taken other recent steps to help reduce student loan debt, including capping student loan payments to 10% of a borrower's income for 20 years. That move has helped reduce student loan defaults, and enrollment in the income-based programs has risen 64% from September 2013 to September 2014, according to the Department of Education. Last week, the department announced cancellation of contracts with 5 private collection agencies that reportedly deceived borrowers into believing they could have collection fees waived if they paid up past due debts. The average college graduate today has nearly $29,000 in student debt. Nationwide, total student loans now surpass $1.3 trillion, the Washington Post reports. The new rules will apply only to federal student loans, not education loans made by banks and other private lenders. However, President Obama has instructed federal agencies to consider new regulations or laws to help protect consumers from predatory private student loan practices in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report. California Highway Patrol arrested David Innes, a 47-year-old El Cajon resident, after receiving a call reporting a motorist with a gun on Interstate 15 at Carroll Canyon Road. The witness gave the license plate and descriptions of the vehicle and the driver. CHP officers stopped the vehicle and located a handgun inside the vehicle. Innes faces charges of brandishing a firearm, carrying a concealed loaded weapon in a vehicle, and carrying a loaded firearm in public, said Officer Jake Sanchez.
A U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agent has been arrested and now faces federal charges after allegedly installing a hidden video camera in a women's restroom at a Customs and Border Protection facility in Chula Vista. FBI Special Agent Eric Birnbaum announced the arrest of Armando Gonzalez, who was taken into custody in El Cajon on Friday. On Monday, a federal complaint was unsealed, revealing that Gonzalez is charged with video voyeurism and making false statements. A card from the camera includes an image of a man believed to be Gonzalez installing the camera in the drain of the women's bathroom. The investigation found hundreds of videos that were allegedly recorded inside. On Monday, Gonzalez appeared before U.S. Magistrate Judge Jill Burkhart, who set bond at $50,000 and issued an order forbidding Gonzalez from having any contact with the victims. A preliminary hearing is set for March 19th before Judge Burkhart. This case is being investigated by the FBI, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Office of Inspector General, U.S. Customs and Border Protection's Internal Affairs, and the San Diego Police Department. The matter is being prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office here in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we have a real treat for you. My very special guest is Christina Turin. She is the director of the International Harp Therapy Program, the founder of the Rainbow of Sound Harp Circles, a music therapist. She also started PlayHarp.com and Angel Harps, which is a nonprofit. And she's here to tell us about some wonderful Irish Celtic harp concerts coming up here in San Diego County for St. Patrick's Day weekend, about some music therapy programs involving harps, and why Mount Laguna is the harp heaven of the world. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
So, Christina, tell us about the St. Patrick's Weekend concerts that you have coming up.
It's very exciting. We have about 130 harp players from all over the world coming to San Diego for a conference on learning how to take music into hospitals and hospices and senior homes and schools. And we have two concerts that are going to be open to the public. The first one on Sunday, March 15th, is at 6:30 in the evening, and we're featuring six of the most world-famous harp players. There's Alfredo Ortiz, who's playing Paraguayan harp. There's Lynn Sorsha from Ireland, Dublin. She's going to play Irish harp, and we have a fiddle player, too.
Marvelous.
Esther Hackett. And we have a woman from Taiwan. We have a woman from Israel. We have a woman from Australia who's playing jazz harp. And I'm going to do some things with some friends on that concert. Now, the big concert that I really want to tell people about is on St. Patrick's Day, which is March 17th on a Tuesday night. We're doing it fairly early, and we hope that the families will bring their kids so that they can see harps. In fact, the children will have an opportunity to come up and play the harp.
What fun.
Bring your seniors. Go to the nursing homes and bring your seniors out. It's a very affordable concert for the whole family, and we will have over 100 harp players playing at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Mission Valley.
My goodness. And listeners, if you want to get more information or ticket details, you can go to playharp.com.
Right. There'll be a little green box there with shamrocks. So just click on that and you'll find out a lot more information.
That sounds wonderful. Now, Christina is a second-generation harpist, and she has quite an amazing bio. I'm just going to read a little bit of this. She began playing harp at the age of four. She has music and education degrees from the University of Vermont, studied harp at the Mozarteum in Salzburg, Austria, and at McGill University in Montreal. She has also studied counseling and psychology. She has training as a music therapist from Arizona State University. She's an international recording and touring artist, a workshop organizer, and she's been instrumental in revival of the folk harp since the early 1970s. She also founded the Scottish Harp Society of America, and she's the founder and director of the International Harp Therapy Program, where she does healing with sound, working in hospitals and hospices. And in addition to all of that, she performed for 17 years with the Von Trapp family from The Sound of Music.
My gosh, I feel tired just hearing all that.
What was that like, performing with the Von Trapps?
It was an experience never to be missed. The family was just amazing. The music is nothing really like what you would hear on the Sound of Music movie. Mm-hmm. That was made from Hollywood, but the music they sang was beautiful German leader type music, and the family was so gracious, and just going to work every night playing in the dining room. I remember specifically with Maria Von Trapp that she said to me one night, she said, "I want you to come here." And I thought, oh my gosh, is my dirndl too short, too low? And she was a very strict woman. And I went there and she goes, "What was that song you just played?" And I said, "Well, it's called In the Garden." She goes, "Go play it again." So I went to play it again, and she motioned for me to come over, and she says, "You see out there in the out the window?" She says, "Out there is In the Garden, and my husband, the Baron Von Trapp, is buried out there, and someday I'm going to be there with him." So for 7 years, every single night, for six nights a week, I would play that song for her.
Oh,
and then one night I came to work, and all of the Von Trapp children were sitting with Father Vossner at the table, and they said, "Mother's in a coma in the hospital. Could you play her song?"
Oh, my.
And I played it, and the chords were rippling up. In fact, maybe one of these days, Miriam, you will play In the Garden off the CD that I gave to you.
I would love to do that.
And that's Maria's song. And right after I finished, I could just feel everything just ascending upwards. And the maitre d' came over, gave the telephone to Erica Von Trapp, and said, she came over and she said, "Mother just passed away and we need to go to the hospital." So I felt like I was playing her song right at the very end.
What a touching story. And listeners, I think this would be a good time for us to play a little excerpt of that song off of the CD. ¶¶ Beautiful music. Now, Christina, what brought you to Mount Laguna of all places on Earth?
Well, I think it's the most beautiful place on Earth, actually. Back in the late 1960s, there was a man by the name of Roland Robinson, and we called him Robbie, and he's known as the folk harp founder, the father of the folk harp. There were no small harps in existence before he went down to Paraguay and found a Paraguayan harp. At the same time, I went to Scotland and I found a small Scottish harp. So between the two of us, we were really the initiators of the Renaissance of the folk harp. And he had many people come up to Mount Laguna to learn how to build harps.
Yeah, I understand. You've told me that Mount Laguna has a population of 81 people, a thriving metropolis something.
Right.
And out of those 81 people in this small town, 9 of them are harp players.
Well, not only harp players, but there are 9 harp businesses where they make harps. They make harp strings or have things to do with harps with animals.
Mm-hmm.
Sue Raymond was the person that got me out here. She could not come to one of our training centers in Vermont and Oregon and Florida. So she said, could you come out here?
How difficult is it to learn to play the harp?
Not very difficult at all. Not. It's one of the easiest instruments to learn how to play. The big harp may be the hardest instrument of all because there's 21 places for your feet to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the little harp is very easy, and maybe I'll just give you a little strum on it.
Well, that would be fun. Let me give that a try.
Okay.
I'm going to give this a try. I've never touched one of these folks. Quite up to your skill level, but it's a lot of fun, and it sure is beautiful music.
Beautiful. That is what we do with people in nursing homes and schools. We show them how easy it is to just make music, and I love seeing the faces light up with joy.
It must be a marvelous thing to do, and I know they're doing more and more research on music therapy and finding, for example, that with Alzheimer's patients, music has a way of reaching them and drawing them out of this dark place that they're in. Even when many of their other memories are gone, they can still remember and respond to music.
That's true. And especially they like to have music come in around 5 or 6 o'clock at night. It's called the sundowner syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And the place in the brain where you hold music is a different place than where you hold language.
Mm-hmm.
So once the part of the brain that's being affected by the Alzheimer's disease is affected, the other part where they hold music is still active. And that's why it's so important to bring those songs, especially of the courtship years of their life. So if somebody is like 90 years old, you might play something from the 1920s, 30s probably at this point.
Yeah, that they would respond to and remember. Very good idea. Now, you have another organization called the Rainbow Girls. Tell us about that.
Well, it's not my organization, actually. What it is that we do things with certain groups of people in the community. And we have this delightful group of girls from El Cajon Lakeside come together, and they've had 6 lessons. And they're going to perform at our conference this weekend on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And they're all dressed up in different colors because they have six different colored harps. Actually, there's eight of the girls. They are the girls of the Shriners and the Eastern Star organization. Mm-hmm. We do many different types of groups, summer camps for children with special needs, terminal illnesses, and we have these beautiful colored harps, and they've made these outrageous hats, and they've learned Irish music, and they are preparing to go off to Fresno to play for the Grand Assembly talent show to see if they can go to nationals and win by playing harps.
Wow, that sounds amazing. You also have an organization called Angel Harps, which is a nonprofit group. What's that all about?
Angel Harps is an organization where people can donate money to help put harps into the hands of children with special needs.
Nice.
And so we're very grateful to places like Kohl's and Target for doing that and helping mm-hmm. people open up their world to music and getting instruments in their hands.
And if people want to donate or find out more about Angel Harps, is that also at the playharp.com
yes,
site?
Yeah, they can find that at playharp.com.
Very good. Now, you are holding a Celtic harp, is that correct, that you brought with us today?
Yeah, this is a small Celtic harp.
Beautiful. Tell us how the Celtic harp differs from regular harps that people might have seen on the concert stage and a little bit about its interesting history.
Okay. Very quickly, small harps were very popular in Ireland and Scotland around 900 AD, 1100. Harps actually went out of style because people were carrying political information from house to house, and it was the musician that after a while was deemed to be beheaded.
So they were the rabble-rousers of their day.
Yes. They would go and entertain, but at the same time they would give information.
Wow.
And so at one point the king said, anybody who plays the harp, you're going to be beheaded.
My goodness.
So it completely died out. In the 1600s, there was a revival of the old Irish music,
mm-hmm.
and harps got a little bit bigger, and they went away from the metal-strung harp. Then in the 1700s, you find the harps that you see in the orchestra today, and I have one, my mother's harp, the big gold concert harp mm-hmm. with all of the beautiful glistening, and they developed. It was only really in the late 60s and 70s that the small harp came back. There was a thread that stayed alive through a convent in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and people like Derek Bell from the Chieftains. He was able to go to Mary O'Hara and get that harp and just say, let's revive this.
And the harp renaissance lives on today.
Oh, my
with
gosh.
With its roots right here on Mount Laguna in East County.
Absolutely, right here,
that
East County.
That is amazing. Amazing. I never knew that. Listeners, we have a treat for you now. We're going to play an excerpt off of Christina's album, which is called White Rose. And this is a medley of harp music, Irish tunes, all about roses. Thank you. Isn't that beautiful? Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been interviewing Christina Turin, who is with PlayHarp.com, an organization of harpists who've been fomenting a harp revival right here on Mount Laguna in East County. And we've been talking about all of their music therapy programs that they do, as well as some concerts coming up here in San Diego on St. Patrick's Day. Christina, I'd like to end with having you tell us about those concerts one more time for listeners who may have just tuned in.
Okay. I hope everybody marks their calendars. Sunday, March 15th, 6:30 to 8:30, great time of the day. Six world top harp players are going to perform at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Mission Valley. And then on Tuesday, March 17th, at 7 o'clock p.m., we're going to have over 100 harp players playing duets, ensembles. We'll have children come up and play. Invite your family, seniors. Go to playharp.com for more information, and we hope to see you there. And we will even be giving out a small harp.
My goodness. Well, that sounds like a marvelous way to spend St. Patrick's Day in San Diego. Christina, do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, I think that in this world of all of the media and all of the things that we're bombarded with on a daily basis, to be able to sit down and create and make music is one of the biggest joys that anybody can find in their life. And if this is something that you think might speak to you, I really encourage you just to drop me a line at playharp.com and find out what kind of things are happening in this community here in East County in San Diego. Making music is joyful.
I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, and we're going to end with a little bit more Irish music, listeners.
Thank you so much, Miriam, for having me.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Firefighters from multiple agencies took to the streets on March 4th during the annual boot drive, raising money for the San Diego Burn Institute. Countywide, those smiling firefighters brought in over $175,000 stuffed into their boots by residents across our region. The money will help send children who are burn victims to Camp Beyond the Scars and will also be used for burn prevention activities through the Burn Institute. This has been Leon Thompson for East County Magazine.
This is Marilyn Lyons with an education report. Elementary school students learning about the science of natural disasters across San Diego are also learning how to stay safe and be prepared. A $15,000 donation from AT&T will be used to buy a hand crank-powered radio for each participating classroom to add to its emergency kit. The County Board of Supervisors has voted to accept the donation from the telecommunications company in support of the county's Be Aware, Be Prepared disaster curriculum. Target also donated $10,000 last year to help buy the radios. The program teaches children about disaster readiness and complies with educational Common Core state standards. The goal is for students to take this knowledge of natural disasters and preparedness into adulthood. Teachers in San Diego County can sign up for free curriculum materials, and the first 1,500 San Diego teachers who adopt the curriculum will receive a crank-powered emergency radio flashlight purchased through donations from AT&T and Target. The preparedness curriculum is on track to be adopted as an educational model in the state and around the country.
And the Borrego Desert wildflowers are both beautiful and fragile. Some of the best wildflower displays in years were reported just days ago along DiGiorgio Road. But now a natural predator has moved in droves. Voracious caterpillars are chomping down these delicate blooms and may next feast on blossoms along Henderson Canyon Road. The Anza Borrego Desert Park website reported on Monday, the advance of the caterpillars means that our big fields of flowers will not be around much longer. The flowers that existed on Giorgio Road a week ago are now entirely gone due to the caterpillars. But it's not all bad news. These caterpillars will soon undergo a metamorphosis, turning into white-linked sphinx moths, commonly known as hummingbird moths, and the moths help pollinate the flower fields for future growth. The moths are also a favorite delicacy of migrating swains and hawks, which have swooped into Anza Borrego and are now reportedly gorging on caterpillars. Fortunately, you can still see desert wildflowers in some other nearby locations. For details, you can visit the Anza Borrego Desert State Park website or call the State Wildflower Hotline at 760-767-4684. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Our nation is warming up to solar power. Solar accounted for 32% of all new generating capacity in the U.S. in 2014, beating out both wind energy and coal for the second year in a row. Only natural gas had a bigger share of new generating capacity. That's according to a brand new study just out from the Solar Energy Industries Association and GTM Research. The report, titled U.S. Solar Market Insight 2014 Year in Review, found that new solar photovoltaic capacity grew 30% last year, reaching a record 6,201 megawatts. Another 767 megawatts of concentrating solar power also came online. In 2014, for the first time in history, each of the three major U.S. market segments, utility, commercial, and residential, installed over a gigawatt of PV solar apiece. Roan Resch, president of the Solar Energy Industries Association, says growth was fueled by the solar investment tax credit. Today, the U.S. solar industry has more employees than tech giants Google, Apple, Facebook, and Twitter combined. Since the investment tax credit was passed in 2006, more than 150,000 solar jobs have been created in America, and $66 billion has been invested in solar installations nationwide. Nationwide, there's now 20 gigawatts of solar capacity installed, enough to power 4 million homes in America and reduce harmful carbon emissions by 20 million metric tons a year. GTM Research forecasts that the U.S. PV market will grow 31% in 2015. The utility segment is expected to account for 59% of a forecasted 8.1 gigawatts of photovoltaic power set to be installed. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Tomato Mania, a healthy living fair, a desert art show, and St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Ramona Music Festival, the Harpfest Harmonica Extravaganza, and Vallecito Day, bringing frontier times to life.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. The East County Youth Symphony Orchestra will perform a concert in collaboration with the Cuyamaca College String Orchestra and Choir on Friday, March 13th at 7:30 p.m. The concert will be held at the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Theater in El Cajon.
San Pasqual Winery invites you to Friday with Frank Sinatra, featuring Sinatra-era music and sparkling drinks such as Bubbly Blonde and Classy But Sassy on Friday, March 13th from noon to 9 p.m. For details, you can visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
Tomato Mania, the world's largest heirloom tomato seedling sale, is coming to Cuyamaca College on March 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event showcases perhaps the most drought-tolerant vegetable of all with a collection of heirloom and hybrid tomatoes. You can also learn how to grow perfect tomatoes in two classes offered at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. In addition, author Scott Dragry, author of Tomato Mania, will be on hand signing copies of his book. Admission to the Tomato Mania plant sale event is free. For more information, visit tomatomania.com.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th in downtown El Cajon on Main Street in Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or a green mile competition, the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For full details, visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Desert artwork will be on display at the Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs on March 14th and 15th. This juried art show will showcase California's secret desert with exhibitions that include paintings, sculptures, weavings, jewelry, and photography. For details, visit circleofart.org.
The County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency and partner agencies are hosting a free community health fair called Spring Into Healthy Living at the Cameron Family YMCA Santee on Wednesday, March 18th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. Vendors and exhibitors will be offering free health screenings plus information on senior services, county programs, healthy lifestyle, decluttering, maximizing the brain, volunteer opportunities, and much more. Attendees may RSVP by calling the AARP reservation line at 1-877-926-8300.
You can meet the artists Vanessa Rusick and Sunbelt Publishers authors Philip Pride, Diana Lindsay, Jack Enos, and Nicholas Clapp, writers covering nature in our region. It's all part of a Going Native Spring Equinox celebration on Friday, March 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at O'Don Fine Art in La Mesa. The evening of art and book signings also includes refreshments. For more information, visit odinfineart.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier during Vallecito's Day on Saturday, February 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecito's County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch since there's no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert on County Road S2 at mile marker 3435. For information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. The festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit RamonaMusicFest.org.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of the Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on March 28th and 29th and on April 4th. This annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train and an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
Santee Lakes invites the public to its annual extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, a petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides. Brought to you by the City of Santee and the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. For full details, visit hop on over to SanteeLakes.com.
12 top bands will take stage at the 16th annual Spring Harp Fest, a harmonica extravaganza at La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 4th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This will be an all-day harmonica music. The annual outdoor family-friendly musical tribute is a fundraiser to support children's music education in San Diego. Last year, the organization donated $3,000 of proceeds to the Blues Lovers United of San Diego's Blues in the Schools program to help pass the love of the harmonica on to the next generation. For a full lineup, see springharpfest.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Ed Moreno with a hot story for you to soak up. Taking saunas frequently can dramatically reduce your risk of cardiac death. That's the latest finding from a STEMI study at the University of Eastern Finland, which has just been published in the Internal Medicine Journal of the American Medical Association. The more you take a sauna, and the longer you stay in that warm, steamy environment, the stronger the benefits for your heart. Those are the findings of a study on more than 2,000 middle-aged men. The study compared men who took saunas once a week, two or three times a week, and seven times a week. The 20-year follow-up study discovered that men taking a sauna from 4 to 7 times a week were 63% less likely to experience sudden cardiac death than those taking a sauna just once a week. The frequent sauna use not only was correlated to a reduction in deaths from coronary artery disease and other cardiac events, but deaths from other causes too. The risk of death due to a cardiac event was also lower among those who spent longer times in the sauna. According to study leader Jari Laukkanen, the reasons why taking a sauna protects the heart are not yet fully understood, and further research is needed. But researchers believe that taking a sauna may reduce blood pressure and maintain blood vessel elasticity. So now you can relax in a sauna to not only soothe away stress, but also to help your heart and extend your life.
A war memorial in La Mesa has been vandalized for the second time in 2 years. On Monday, 10 News reports that last week, vandals tried to pry off two metal plaques honoring East County Vietnam veterans at the memorial located next to the Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall. Back in 2013, thieves did steal two plaques, which were replaced with help from community donations. Oresta Johnson's father was the stonemason who built the memorial 45 years ago. She called the vandalism disheartening and noted that the plaques do not have much monetary value, but they do have great emotional value for the families of loved ones honored at the monument. Johnson told 10 News that La Mesa's memorial is cherished by so many people. The La Mesa Police Department is investigating this crime. Meanwhile, families hope new security cameras in the area will deter future vandals. The memorial was created by the Heartland Youth for Decency organization back in 1970, which was started by Ellis and Virginia Evers and included many local high school students. It was among the first memorials in the nation to honor veterans of the Vietnam conflict. Donations to help restore and maintain the monument may be made to the Heartland Youth for Decency organization, which has a website at hyfd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
While the thought of eating the family dog or cat may sound repulsive to most Americans, in some cultures it is considered quite normal. One California group is trying to change that perception. Fia Pereira co-founded the U.S. branch of the animal advocacy group No to Dog Meat, based in Los Angeles. Pereira says an underground dog and cat meat trade exists in U.S. cities, including Los Angeles and San Bernardino. She says some cultures believe the animal's meat tastes better only after the animal has been frightened.
The level of torture in which these animals go through is one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. Being plunged into vats of boiling water, skinned alive, tortured in front of other animals.
Pereira says in some cases the dogs and cats are stolen pets. No to Dog Meat is working on raising awareness of the torture often found in the underground meat trade and to close pet consumption loopholes that exist in laws. The consumption of cat or dog meat is legal in 44 U.S. states, but specific details of the laws vary from state to state. In California, it is a misdemeanor to consume the carcass of an animal that was kept as a pet. Asking people to give up eating what is acceptable to them is not without controversy, and Pereira says while her group respects other cultures' traditions,
torturing a dog or a cat for human consumption is not tradition, it's just blatant torture, and there's no place in a civilized, evolved society.
There is an online petition to Governor Jerry Brown asking him to tell sister state Canton, China, to stop the cat and dog meat trade. Pereira says the effort needs to be global. 11 regions around the world that eat dog meat include Taiwan, Mexico, Vietnam, Switzerland, the Arctic, Antarctic, China, Indonesia, Korea, Philippines, and Polynesia. For Public News Service, I'm Monique Coppola.
And now for a sports report from East County Magazine. The Aztecs men's basketball team has captured its 9th Mountain West title, the highest number in league history. The Aztecs defeated Nevada State 67-43 at Viejas Arena on Saturday night to secure their title, which is shared with Boise State. The Aztecs had 3 players score in double digits. Dwayne Poley III, Aquin Quinn, and Winston Shepard. 6 others scored 7 points or more. Boise landed the number 1 seed in the conference tournament set to start late this week in Las Vegas. The Aztecs are number 2 seed and will play in the quarterfinals on Thursday night at 6 p.m. Semifinals will be on Friday night with final rounds on Saturday. Aztecs athletics are hot overall. Since the beginning of 2012 to 2013, San Diego State University has won a total of 23 team conference championships. This season alone, SDSU has won 4 Mountain West titles, women's soccer regular season, women's soccer tournament, women's swimming and diving, and now men's basketball.
As the nation commemorates the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights March in Selma, investigative reporter Greg Palast has published findings that show we still have a long way to go as a nation to achieve civil rights for all people and voting rights for all people. A special investigation conducted by Palast found a massive secret database used by election officials in 28 states. Nearly all of those officials were Republicans, and the scheme, called Interstate Crosscheck, threatened to disqualify ballots of over 1 million voters, and overwhelmingly, these were citizens of color. With help from Al Jazeera America, Palast obtained the actual names of over 2 million of those 3.5 million citizens being threatened with disenfranchisement. Republican election officials claimed these people had voted twice in the same election in 2 different states. If true, that would be a crime. The officials said those mail-in ballots would be thrown away and that voters' registrations would be voided. Palast found the officials were disqualifying people who had similar names to people in other states. For instance, an election official claimed that Kevin Antonio Hayes in North Carolina and Kevin Thomas Hayes in Virginia were the same person, despite a lack of any evidence whatsoever that Kevin Hayes in North Carolina had voted twice. The only similarity between the two voters was their first and last names, but not their middle names. This was a pattern he found over and over. North Carolina managed to disqualify enough voters of color using this technique to flip a U.S. Senate race into the red column last November, says Palast, who also questioned why none of these voters were arrested if authorities really believed they had voted twice. Martin Luther King III has asked why the preponderance of black voters in the South has not turned more states blue. Despite high African-American populations, states like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas still have solid Republican leadership. Decades ago, bigots in the South relied on Jim Crow laws, lynchings, and beatings to help keep African-American voters from the polls. But today, Palast observes, Jim Crow has traded in his white sheets for spreadsheets. Those electronic databases are reversing the gains made by the Voting Rights Act, celebrated in the closing scenes of the movie Selma. It's not only disenfranchisement of individual voters that's a problem. One notorious election in 2002 saw an Alabama courthouse lock its doors to recount the votes, barring the press and black Democrats. In the morning, white officials claimed they had found a glitch in the count that reversed the outcome of the election, shifting over 6,000 votes away from a Democratic candidate favored by black voters. There were no paper ballots, and there was no way to verify this seemingly suspicious outcome. Those are just two of nine methods that Palace claims to have uncovered, being used today to disenfranchise an estimated 5.9 million black voters in modern-day America. Moreover, in June 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court nullified key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, and Republican-controlled Congress has thus far been unwilling to take actions to restore those lost rights. The High Court threw out a provision which had required states with a pattern of racial discrimination in the past to get congressional approval before changing voting laws for the future. Palace concludes that the march in Selma is not over, and that America collectively needs to march over the bridge again and again and again. Palace, whose parents formerly lived right here in La Mesa in East County, has won international recognition for his reporting on voter discrimination and disenfranchisement. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.